The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The voice of the people. News Talk 710, KNUS, Denver. One of us is wrong here. The other is Peter Boyles on News Talk 710, KNUS.
Boy, don't I wish that were true. Good morning, everyone. It is a Monday. Back to work, September 28, 2020. Good old 710, KNUS. Very cold yesterday. Cold morning. 64 is all we get. 42 degrees tonight. Sneaks back tomorrow to 75 degrees. On the website, yesterday was the MC1 honor run, and it was way cold. We just talked to Deputy Sheriff Mark Miller, and there's a lot of pictures are up on the website, 710knus.com, from Rocky Mountain Harley-Davidson, the ride itself, everything that happened. It's up, 710knus.com, and a column I wrote. And the latest one this month, One Ring to Control Them All, knocking off Tolkien, about the politics of Colorado. Both are up at 710knus.com. It's interesting how things work. This morning on the internet, the headline was military suicides up as much as 20% in COVID era. We're going to do some things this hour that I think are important to do. Please say good morning and welcome to the radio show. His name is Lestine Benton, Benson, retired from the military. But we'll let him do the story. Hey, Sergeant, good morning, man. Thanks for doing the radio show and welcome to 710 KNUS.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. I read your bio and about things that are happening in the country with, and not only with, you know, with former GIs, but across the board, civilians as well. First of all, if you would, please talk about yourself, what happened, and then we'll begin to speak about depression and anxiety and all, everything that seems to be coming everyone's way these days.
Sure. Yeah, I was hit by an IED in 2005 in Iraq. Joined the Army shortly after 9/11 in 2001. Got out later in 2006. That's really about it for just a quick short story.
How badly were you hurt?
Oh, right. I was a double amputee. It took off my left leg and my right leg. Left below the knee and right way above the knee, just below the hip.
So you came back to the States and then began to talk there. You retired from Fort Campbell. And then if you would tell the story.
Came back to Walter Reed, or got to Walter Reed and started doing some rehabilitating and recuperating, healing. They do a bit of, you know, tests and, you know, just see how you're doing. Mentally, I was doing fine. They did rate me with a bit of anxiety due to PTSD. I didn't really feel a whole lot of it. So I just kind of got out of the hospital, got on to living with my wife. Moved around a bit, moved into Texas for 5 years, and then about 9 years ago moved up here to Colorado. I was on the military ski racing team.
Yeah, I know.
and then my daughter, my wife got pregnant with my daughter. I quit ski racing because it was just took too much time out of my life, and found hockey, and so I was playing hockey just kind of get some camaraderie and team fellowship and stuff like that, and it was a fun sport. And right around the time that my daughter was born, you know, some higher anxiety stuff kind of started creeping up on me just out of nowhere. And I kind of figured I was out of that zone of you know, being in trouble, I guess, mentally, but I was going to be good. But I guess I wasn't, and it just kind of started creeping up on me slowly by slowly, and next thing I know, I was visiting the ER, thinking I was having a heart attack or whatever. And I would get to the ER, and they would tell me, "No, your vitals are fine. You're good to go." In fact, my vitals were showing up better than they ever had before. My blood pressure and blood sugars and all that other stuff. Couldn't figure out what was going on. And then it just continued to get worse. Mentally, I was just, I didn't know there was anything wrong. It's hard to say, couldn't figure out if it was mental or physical. And eventually people just kept telling me over and over again, you're just kind of, it's in your head kind of thing. And so one day I asked Infinite Hero for some help. I heard somebody speak, saying that pretty much had all the problems, same issues I had, but there was something wrong with them. But every time they went to the doctors, nothing was wrong. And so I asked them for help, and they sent me to a clinic in California for brain treatment. And I gave that a try. And that kind of, I wouldn't say, it didn't cure me, but it really took the edge off. It made living life a lot easier. I haven't been to the ER since.
Sergeant, where do you live now?
I live here. I live in Elizabeth, Colorado.
That's what I read, that you live in Elizabeth. When you skied, where did you ski?
I skied up in Aspen.
Okay. Now, were you doing sit skiing?
Yes.
Have you been back?
Once or twice, really. Yeah. In fact, it was just as COVID was hitting, it was the last time I went, and it was the first time I actually enjoyed it.
That's the last time I went.
Quit ski racing.
That's the last time I went.
The sad thing was I had a full season pass for it.
Yeah. Yeah, that was me too. You want to go back? Aside from everything that you're speaking about, we need to go ski, but I'm familiar with the NSCD, and a lot of that's
okay.
Yeah, that's where a lot of that came out of Southeast Asia and Children's Hospital, and those guys up there, they invented a lot of that. And were you able to lift yourself up on the chairlift without any help?
Oh yeah, I'm totally functional.
Well, we gotta go, man. Yeah. If we're allowed, right? If we're allowed, we'll go.
Right.
I've heard people tell me that skiing has allowed them to have freedom again. Do you call it murder ball, the game you play?
No. That's quad rugby.
Okay. I've seen a couple of those. That's pretty nuts too.
Yeah. Yeah. I played it a little bit.
Did you?
Yeah.
So now you play.
Tough game.
Oh. People don't even get out there, and so you skied on the Army team as well.
No, just the Paralympic military team.
Okay, well, I know some of those guys. Yeah,
yeah.
They'll chase you off the mountain too. You just try that.
Yeah, there's some wild skiers out there.
Oh, we have a ski race every year, a fundraiser every year that I try to ski in, but you go up against one of those guys, forget it. They're that good. They're that good.
They're good.
Sergeant Benson is retired from the Army and was injured badly in Iraq. Now, I'm reading this morning, it's interesting, Billy put all this show together. I knew we were going to do it, but this is on the headline on Associated Press. Military suicides up as 20% in COVID era, and then you read about in the civilian world as well, alcohol, drug addiction. What's going on?
I think we're just in a very high stress time right now. The problem is, people fear what they don't know, and unfortunately, we don't seem to know anything. So it's just high anxiety regardless. of who you are, what you've done, and some of us are already battling anxiety, and that doesn't make it any easier. Mm-hmm. I know I've been pretty stressed out throughout this whole thing.
I was going to ask you, you skied your, you and I probably had the same last ski day when the governor shut down skiing, and the guy that I ski with, Gary DeFranz, we were walking across the street, and we said to the guy who runs the mountain, hey, we'll see you tomorrow. And he said, no, you won't. And I thought it was a joke. And then I found out that, no, seriously, I did. I thought it was a joke. And then they shut down the mountain. And I don't think they're even sure what they're going to do this year. So, you know, all those things that were so important to, certainly to you, certainly to me, a lot of people, that freedom of getting out and running the hill, I don't know it's going to be there anymore. Or at least I don't know what it's going to be like when everything opens in November. What do you think?
Good.
No, you say.
I'm just going to say that I'm always hopeful.
Yeah, me and you. When you slipped in, I call it slipping in a depression. When people that don't know what depression is, how do you describe it?
Honestly, it really is a lot like what you just read about. You know, I found less of a taste for things, mm-hmm. and skiing is a great one of those that's good to, as an example. I just didn't enjoy it. Wound up hating it, and then that was just like the first thing. But as it progressed, I just found everything had less of a taste in my mind. I had less of a desire to do anything that I used to do that was fun. And then I would find that I just didn't even really want to leave the house. I still rather not, but that's because I don't want to wear a mask all the time.
Yeah.
And partially, you know, I'm lazy. So it was hard to figure out. It's hard to,
no.
It was hard to see.
Yeah.
They always say, you know, crazy person can't tell that they're crazy. It just seems like the rest of the world around them is.
No, I mean,
which these days that's even harder because the rest of the world does seem a little crazy right now. And I don't know that that's the individual anymore.
Yeah, no. I a couple times in my life. Did you? And we're going to bring the physicians on here just a second. Did you drink or drug?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of started to self-medicate a little bit just to feel not unhappy, you know. But I was always very careful, very adamant that, you know, I don't. I think because I've had a history of that in my family, that I just wanted to be very careful. And I've actually lost a few friends from the military because of that. So it's just always on my mind and on the forefront that I don't abuse whatever I do. But sometimes, yes, I would try to take something that would just make me feel not unhappy anymore.
Sure. And, well, let it go. Joining us. Please say good morning. Welcome. This is really an important hour on depression and suicide focus. We have both physicians, both last name Park, Charles Park and Heige Park are with us. And what a story they tell. Hey, doctors, good morning. Thanks for joining us. Lestine stays on the line with us. Doctors Park there. Good morning. Welcome, guys, to the show. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
It is my pleasure. First, we'll start. When I say Dr. Park, and everybody's Dr. Park, but to Charles Park, I read your bio, and Heige, I read your bio. Man, there's stories. Dr. Charles Park, would you begin with your story, please, first?
Absolutely. So I am I'm board certified in general psychiatry as well as addiction psychiatry, and it sounds like the gentleman that you have as a caller is a veteran, and that's somebody that's a group of people I worked with actually in the earlier part of my career while I worked at the Denver VA. And currently we have our own practice, but we actually service active duty personnel right now, currently as well.
Hygie Park, you were born in Southeast Asia. I'd read your bio as well, and you are what people then at the time called boat people. So would you give a quick bio?
Right.
Welcome, man. Welcome. Tell the story, if you would, please. Yeah, please.
Yeah, so I am a child of the 70s, and my family and I, we left Vietnam at the end of the Vietnam War in these tiny fishing boats. I think our boat was about 6 to 8 times over capacity. And all our families were dispersed. So I lost my entire maternal side of the family when their fishing boat toppled over. Honestly, I have to say that I've been very blessed that our family, which includes my nuclear family, as well as my grandmother and my paternal aunt, all made it in one shot. And we spent a year in a refugee camp in Malaysia. And so for me, coming to America and being able to build a life and become a physician, particularly a mental health physician, to help our vets, because I am so thankful for the opportunity to live in a country of democracy and freedom.
I mean, I can't get my arms around the stories. They're so powerful, and everything that happens. And I don't know, for whatever, I've been in recovery now for almost 34 years, drugs and alcohol.
Oh, congratulations.
Well, I wouldn't be here. So when people say that, I say, well, somebody else would be doing this radio show. It wouldn't be me. But what are we seeing? Charles, we'll begin, if you don't mind using first names.
Absolutely.
And when you listen to Sergeant Benson, and there's a story this morning, it's interesting how these things come together. A big headline story, military suicides up as much as 20% in COVID area. And I was bouncing around the internet yesterday afternoon, and that's pretty true pretty much in society today, too. I mean, either, you know, non-military civilian life is just totally alienated. Could you address that as well, please?
Absolutely. So Sergeant Benson is I was listening to part of his story, and he really described very well the experience of depression. And what we're trying to do in our clinic is to change people's perceptions of depression to closer to what Sergeant Benson experiences. So it's not just a matter of, do I feel sad or not? If you'll listen to what he said, I don't feel much of anything, or it's hard to feel anything at all. So we also are addressing the thing he said, where this is a man who served his country with honor, and yet he says that he calls himself lazy. Mm-hmm. And so it really shows the irrationality we see in depression, not just whether or not we feel sad, but we actually see irrationality where the person sees themselves in excessively negative light. He also describes having no energy and barely feeling like he can even, you know, leave his house. So in our clinic, what we're trying to do is address these factors more than just how do you feel. We're trying to see, can we improve the irrationality so that your experience, how you see yourself, or your cognitive functioning and how you see yourself is closer to reality. This is a man who served his country with honor.
The irrationality does play a big part, for sure, in my anxiety. Like,
absolutely.
Little things may be wrong with me, maybe. I blow them way out of proportion to the point it doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Sergeant, it's Peter. Do you remember the morning, the first morning you were in depression?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I think it was a slow process.
Yeah, but there was one morning that you knew, that you realized, or I shouldn't say that. I speak for myself. There was one morning, and I always call it the day the music stopped.
Oh. Maybe the morning that it dawned on you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. To Doctors Park, that was part of me, was like, where's the music?
Exactly. So when you both say, like, where's the music, or how come I don't feel any joy, what Sergeant Benson said, it was also like, sometimes I drink a little bit just to try to feel something, that's talking about anhedonia, basically, the feeling like I can't experience any joy or pleasure. Mm-hmm. Like many of my patients will say, I'm not depressed. I get up and I go to work and I come home and I get up and I go to work. But that's all they do because they feel no joy, mm-hmm. but they want to still take care of their family. So again, what we're trying to do is improve the energy. We're trying to prove the irrationality of thinking that they're terrible people when really their families love them. And the most extreme form of irrationality would be, my family would be better off without
there
me.
You
so
go.
We're trying to show, no, that's not what your family is saying. So our treatments are designed to actually improve those irrational thought processes. Mm-hmm. And what Sergeant Benson was saying was that there are times when he overreacts. Well, when we think about PTSD, it's an interesting disease of context where those overreactions might have saved his life in war, but it's when he returns to the States and those memories and those reactions are still alive and it doesn't make sense in the context anymore. So that's the thing we try to work on and improve in our clinic as well, too.
One thing I've noticed is that it doesn't surface always right at the beginning. It's not an issue months afterwards. It could
exactly
take 10 years in my case before they kind of manifest into an issue.
Exactly. And then when we talk about what's going on with COVID right now, your story sounds very much like a gentleman I treated at the VA where he was a very successful individual in corporate America for many years. And it wasn't until he went into retirement is when his symptoms particularly flared up. So when we talk about COVID, I talk about with my patients, studies show that one of the biggest triggers for relapse is boredom and loneliness. Mm-hmm. Well, that's pretty much what everyone's experiencing now in COVID.
These guys are special, you guys. This was Billy Thorpe did this. He put all of this together, depression, suicide, regardless. I mean, we're focusing on vets, but, you know, it's really interesting for me when I realized through people that are way smarter than I'll ever be that alcoholism is a disease.
Yes.
And depression is a disease. It's not behavior.
Yeah, absolutely.
I try and say that on the shows all the time. And again, watching all of the craziness of homelessness, how many of those guys, men and women on that street, if they were to gain sobriety, what would change?
Well, absolutely. And then being military, I find myself saying to myself that I should be stronger than this.
Oh, yeah, sure, of course.
Why am I should be able to control my own feelings.
How about this one? Why am I crying?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't get that much.
Yeah, why am I crying?
So here's the thing is that it's not a problem of strength. You are plenty strong enough. I mean, you served in the military. That's clear, objective data that you are strong. So there's some interesting studies that show that, like, patients with substance use disorder histories, mm-hmm. well, 7 out of 10 of them had a history of depression or mm-hmm. anxiety that preceded the substance use disorder. So how many patients were actually just trying to not experience the symptoms of depression and using these substances to do that? So it's not so much a problem of strength. There's a problem of it's a combination of genetics, basically being too efficient at processing the drugs of abuse in combination with damage to the brain from the depression and anxiety.
We're coming up on time, and what we have to do is we have to get everybody back later to do this again. But to doctor, do you believe that alcoholism is or can be predisposed, and that these kinds of things like depression and alcoholism can be genetically predisposed?
Absolutely,
I do.
Studies show not only can they are genetically predisposed.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Sergeant Benson or yourself, you had no your genetics determined these illnesses, like high blood pressure and diabetes.
Cancer.
It has nothing to do with strength.
Yeah, cancer and everything else that goes with it. I feel like I spent a lifetime reading this stuff, and you try and tell people oh no, this is a, you know, people think it's a behavior. No, it's a disease. I have a running gag that I always say I chose the wrong parents, but you know, but it, and I'm doing, I have relatives that are doing all these, you know, ancestry hunts, and I know about growing up and about my grandparents and stuff like that, and it's generational as hell. And
well, I'd also have you consider one other thing is that your genes may not be as defective as you think. I actually say this to a lot of my patients. Okay. So, for example, if we roll our history back, let's say even 200 years before there was water treatment or anything like that, well, the only source of water was alcohol.
Oh, I agree.
If you try to drink stream water or river water,
get
you
sick.
Die.
Yeah, the French were.
So, there's some degree that the genes actually might have helped people.
Mm-hmm. Just ask the Irish.
Yes, exactly. if you could process the alcohol, you could live and pass on your genes because you could drink the water. Where someone like me, where I don't do well with alcohol, my children would have died.
All right, here's what we're going to do right here. We're going to lose Sergeant Benson. You and I are going to ski together. We'll get you back on the show. I'm keeping the docs. This has turned out to be really remarkable. Depression and suicide focuses. Hey, Sergeant Benson, when we're done, we'll put you on hold. Give Billy a phone number. Give you a call, man. We'll go ski. You think you're going to? You know, we got another year in us.
Yeah.
I mean, I got some connects to the NSCD. You got your gear? Do you have a... You got?
Oh, definitely.
Okay, hang on, everybody. When we come back, this is really great. You never know. Virginia's, and this is going to be powerful. There's a term called Gold Star Mother. Stay here.
Listen live at radio.com. We now return to the Peter Boyle Show.
Morning, everybody, on a Monday. Very powerful hour, September 28, 2020, 710 KNUS. Tommy joins us, and we got to hold up with RTD. Thomas, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Pete. Just a real quick bulletin here. The RTD is experiencing a 45-minute delay after trains were totally down earlier this morning. You need to make note of that if you are taking the RTD. It'll take a while, they say, to get things to normal.
Boy, a problem with RTD.
Yeah.
Fairly rare.
You bet.
Thank you. Okay. On a Monday morning, Billy Thorpe came to me and said, we're going to do this, and it's been emotional. Depression and suicide focus, and back with us on Billy's really doing all the mechanics on this. Doctors Charlie and Hygieia Park, both are physicians and both work in psychiatry. And please say good morning. Welcome to the radio show. Virginia Servacio is our guest, or Servacio. Ms. Servacio, good morning, and thank you, and welcome to 710 KNUS. Thanks for coming on the show.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
No, this is a very powerful moment. Tell your story, please.
I am a mother of the late my son Angelo. He was 24 years old. 14 years ago, he took his own life. He was Air Force. He went in and he was part of Operation Southern Watch. And when he came home, once he was, you know, discharged from the military, he just was not the same. His character was totally different when he came home. But unfortunately, you know, we were not educated on what to look for or, you know, any kind of changes. We just basically thought that the military made a man out of him. You know, he went in as an 18-year-old. He graduated high school. And within the first week, he was off to boot camp. So that's how young he was. And then, of course, 9/11 happened, and he was deployed. But he did come home different. He was definitely more isolated. He was more withdrawn. And we didn't think anything of it. And then in 2006, in January, about a week before his death, I started noticing little things, and one of the biggest things was he started giving away a lot of his stuff. For instance, his, for Christmas, we gave him a brand new computer, and he lived on, you know, he had his own new apartment, and he kept the computer at our house, and I couldn't understand why, and he just kept telling me, you know, oh, my friend's coming over, he's going to help me set it up. And then he was, at that time, you know, 14 years ago, Xbox was very, you know, he had a lot of games and everything, and he started giving away all those things. And when I asked him about that, he says, oh, I'm getting new ones. You know, he always had an excuse. I noticed that he started losing weight. I also noticed that he was complaining he wasn't sleeping, you know, a lot. He just could not fall asleep. He was awake all night long. And then the last few days, like 2-3 days before his death, I noticed that he started hanging around the house a little bit more than usual. Like he didn't want to leave. It's almost like he was saying his goodbyes. And then, of course, you know, we ended up getting the notification that he had taken his life. Once he got out of the military, he became a security officer, and then he became a police officer. So he definitely had access to guns, and that was definitely his method. But we did not know, we did not see it coming. It was just literally a shock. I have two other boys. Angela was my oldest. And they, all of us, the four of us definitely took a little bit differently. We reacted differently. We grieved differently, which is fine. You know, everybody's different. But it took me about 2 months before I got off my couch. It was just, my heart just got ripped out. He definitely suffered from PTSD. He did not want to talk about what he saw, what he went through. He just refused to share anything. So I decided after a couple of months to start a nonprofit organization. At the time, we were living in Florida, so I started a suicide awareness and prevention organization in his memory, and we helped a lot of people. So I was determined. I was determined that he would not just be a statistic for the 22 vets to die every single day. He became a statistic. He threw me into this club. I did not want to belong to the Suicide Survivor Club, but I was thrown in. So I educated myself. I went to conferences. I got my degree. I went to school. You know, I got my bachelor's in sociology. So I did everything I could to educate myself in suicide awareness and prevention. And since, you know, in the past 14 years, we have helped many. In 2014, about 6 years ago, we moved back to New York. We live on Long Island. Long Island is very, very populated with veterans of all eras. So I decided to start a nonprofit organization here where we help any veteran from any era, anywhere in the New York State, you know, New York, the state, the city, Long Island, and we go as far as Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and so forth. I will not turn any veteran away. We are a nonprofit. We are all volunteers. So, you know, we're a little mom and pop shop, mm-hmm. as you want to call it, but we help any way we can. But this organization in New York specifically is geared to veterans. So I cannot tell you. Mm-hmm. The people I am meeting, the stories that I'm hearing, you know, and the lives that we are saving, especially with the new ones that come out that are discharged, you know, Afghanistan, Iraq, the Vietnam vets as well, you know, it never goes away. Mm-hmm. And my goal is to keep going and to keep fighting and to educate. That is the key. And as long as we talk about suicide awareness, as long as we talk about mental health and get everything out there, I think the numbers will go down.
Doctors.
And that's my story.
Yeah. The Parks are with us on the other side.
Yes.
Doctors, follow up on this, if you would, please.
First of all, we want to express our condolences for your son.
Thank you.
And I would also say that you know, even though you didn't want to be part of the suicide club, I think it's great that you've been able to make something meaningful out of his death, and that his memory lives on in the work that you guys do.
Yes,
you know, when it comes to depression, we always tell our patients that this is a brain disease, and it's a very specific kind of brain disease that we see dysfunction in the way that your brain normally works. And in particular, it's a dysfunction of cognition. It's a dysfunction of thinking. And we've been able to identify specific areas of the brain that are actually impacted, that are dysfunction, that are impaired as a result of this phenomenon called depression. And in the 80s, there was frequent discussion about, well, you know, depression is just a depletion of serotonin, of dopamine, of norepinephrine. And more recently, we now have a different model that encompasses this old theory of depletion of certain integral neurotransmitters to depression being a disease of prolonged stress. And when you have prolonged stress, we notice that there is dysfunction in the left dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, for example. And that's the front part of our brain that helps us to interpret information. So why it is that we struggle with energy, loss of appetite, lack of motivation, difficulty with concentration to complete a task, is that depression slows down those parts of the brain. And so even something like your spouse telling you, like, hey, today we got to take out the garbage, when the data coming in from the world sounds like, hey, we're going to go climb Mount Everest. That's how people with depression interpret information, whether it's information through interactions or events, whether it's political events, socioeconomic events, that it's really about that impairment of interpretation and therefore the subsequent actions that we take that leads to many of the things that we notice about depression. And so, for example, the left dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, the underfunctioning of that part of the brain, we actually now have 21st century technology called transcranial magnetic stimulation that actually targets that area to restimulate electrical flow, as well as an increase in those neurotransmitters that are depleted. And so we have more data, and so it's so much more treatable. It just has to be talked about. I think family members, you know, I think the it's the lack of information, because we cannot expect the patients who suffer from depression or PTSD to know. And we have to educate those important people around them to be able to look at, observe those signs and symptoms.
Doctors, it's Peter. We're on a hold here right now. Let me ask you both a question, and then we're going to bring everybody back. We'll work a couple show days. Can young kids go into depression? And at what age is possible, conceivable, does that begin to happen? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think there's been all this controversy that even preschool kids right. cannot experience depression. No. And the truth of the matter is that the data yeah. shows the yeah. opposite.
Yeah, I agree.
We actually see a 60% increase in the sure. age range of 10 to 24-year-olds mm-hmm. In suicide rates.
Yeah, no, it's childhood stuff fascinates me. I'm an ACA, and but I've been reading, I'm drawn into, and I don't want to spend a lot of time with this, and we got to take a break, but they would find in these horrible concentration camps where little kids drew happy pictures on the walls. Because yeah. they needed to find that, and we're right here, Ms. Cavazza. We're gonna drop everybody. I'll put everybody on hold. I'm gonna invite the Parks to come in studio. You guys are local, right? I'm pretty sure you are.
Yep.
Yeah. Bring
you
in. Yeah. And I got.
Thank you.
No. Please. I want to pursue this, and I want you guys to come in studio with it. And it's so emotional. And
yeah.
Virginia, you are tremendous. I mean, you're something. And there's the train. So let me.
Sorry.
let me throw everybody on hold here, and we'll get the doctors here. Virginia, you know how to get a hold of us if you need us. We got to do a quick turnaround, everybody. Everybody's up on hold. It's a Monday, September 28, 2020, 710 KNUS.
Now, back to the Peter Boyle Show.
Good morning, everyone. It's 7:46, powerful hour. Coming up, one of our true favorites, Wilford Riley, comes back on the radio show, on and off the air. Man, what an hour. It's a Monday, 64 will be the high. Brian Gray joins us from Alpine Planning. We're running up. Brian, good morning, man. Thanks.
Hey, good morning, Pete. Hope you had a good weekend. And, yeah, we are off to a good start. We currently have the Dow up 368 points. NASDAQ's up 154. And the S&P is up about 44 points. Now, this is coming off 3 weeks of a dead market. But one of the things we need to take a look at, and I think one of the reasons you're seeing this big run-up, is we're coming up on the end of the quarter. So what you're seeing is a lot of these portfolio managers or mutual fund managers, they're selling off their bad positions and they're replacing them with other holdings, and I think that's what's kind of giving it the boost. The other thing we want to keep an eye on is the airline industry. It's hurting. Next week, if Congress does not provide more federal help, up to 100,000 airline employees could possibly be laid off. The CARES Act last time provided a $50 billion bailout to keep the airlines afloat. So we got a lot going on. Story of the day, obviously President Trump only paying $750 in federal taxes. Yeah. how he got away with that one, I don't know. Well, but it's going to be interesting to see if Biden bites into that tomorrow night during the debate.
On your side, if the New York Times holding back, we'll see what happens. But boy, that debate, we're going to rock and roll. 303-843-0918. Market's running up today. 303-843-0918. Investing is a matter of trust. Call Brian this morning. Bubba, we'll do it tomorrow. We got more time. Thanks, man.
All right, Pete. Have a good one.
Securities and investment advisory services offered through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA SIPC and registered investment advisor. Alpine Planning Group and Woodbury Financial Services, Inc. are not affiliated entities. 14 West Dry Creek Circle, Littleton, Colorado, 80120.
All right, good morning, everyone. This has been an extremely powerful hour. Billy Thorpe produced it and put it together. Depression, anxiety, and suicide amongst veterans, but the general population as well. Please now welcome to the radio show. Courtney James is with us, and Comfort Dental's Neil Norton, Dr. Norton. Hey, you guys, good morning. And who's you got Fast Jack's helmet, man. How cool was this? So who wants to begin with, first of all, Courtney, good morning to you. I should do this one at a time.
Good morning.
Yeah, and Doc, thanks, man. Good morning to you as well.
Good morning.
All right, so actually I know Fast Jack, which makes this even more cool. But these guys have I met Fast Jack out at Bandamere, and when he comes to town, they always do the radio show. And Fast Jack is a funny car driver. Tell the story how you got his helmet and you're raffling it off. So who wants to begin?
Well, let me kick that off. I, by the way, thank you for having us on this morning and giving us an opportunity to have a conversation around this critical issue that is impacting our military and veterans in such a, you know, really challenging way right now. And I think, you know, as an organization, Infinite Hero focuses and exists to connect our military and veterans and their family members with innovative and effective treatment for service-related injuries. And two of our pillars, brain health and suicide prevention, have been at the forefront in these recent months. And when we were looking at the impact that we were seeing, you know, COVID have, I mean, we're receiving anywhere between 75% and 300% increase and request for mental health support right now with our veterans, which is, you know, beyond anything we could have, I think, projected going into this. And when we were looking at the impact that the pandemic has had, we thought we needed, you know, as an organization to do something. And with September being Suicide Prevention Month, we wanted to take that opportunity to just bring a lot more awareness to what we're trying to do as an organization and those programs that support our combat veterans like that team who are living with PTSD, traumatic brain injury, depression, and suicidal ideation. So we formed Task Force 22, and it's an opportunity for us to shine a light on some really incredible heroes who donated their time to auction off video calls, but that's how we came across that Jack's helmet. So there's an amazing gentleman out of Idaho that custom painted this helmet for Jack, and he's been wearing it down the track this season. Actually won Indy with it a couple weeks ago, and that's one of the items that's actually part of the Task Force 22 campaign that people can enter to win. So it's a really unique item, that's for sure. They can also enter to win time with Jack himself, and he's put together a pretty cool prize package.
Really cool guy.
But we have, you know, heroes like Navy SEAL Jason Redman and Medal of Honor recipient Samuel Davis, motocross champ Terry Hart, and list goes on.
How do you enter? Because of time, coming up on time, how can people enter, please?
Just go to infinitehero.org. And all the information's right there for you. But yeah, I mean, we've been fortunate to be part of your community there, through the club at Ravenna. They've raised over $1.7 million for us, over the course of the last 6 years in, you know, an annual fundraising event that they hold. And that's how I had the opportunity to connect with, Dr. Norton. So I'm so pleased he's on the call this morning.
Here we go. Neil Norton, it's yours now. How and why did you get involved in this as well?
Well, last year we attended the fundraiser that Courtney was referring to at Ravenna, and we got to meet Jason and several other vets that are involved with Infinite Heroes, and we immediately decided we had to do something. We hold our veterans in great esteem, and we look around and realize there's not enough being done the way it should be, and particularly in the areas of brain health and mental health and suicide awareness and those kinds of things. And we thought, you know, what can we do? And I contacted Courtney, and she gave us a couple of options, and I thought, this is great. It really fits in with our mission, you know, of outreach in the community. And the rest just grew from there. So we're really excited about our relationship with Infinite Heroes and can't wait to really get it going in a big way.
One of the things that I'm witnessing in the last, I don't know, 25 years, 30 years, is more and more awareness of alcohol addiction, drug addiction, anxiety, depression. And then when we go through this pandemic, back if we could to Courtney for a moment, it's in all parts of society today. It's not only with these, you know, the returning veterans, but everyday life. I mean, you can read these stories on alcoholism, drug addiction, people taking their own lives. It's running as we speak. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It's definitely, I think, a hard situation to try to kind of navigate given the uncertainties that COVID's presented. You know, but when I saw the article that you were referencing earlier come out from AP, I wasn't surprised in the slightest. I mean, I know they talk a lot about, you know, military suicides increasing as much as 20%, you know, since the start of COVID. I have every confidence that that is a correct, you know, number given what we're seeing. You know, I think when COVID hit, everybody kind of tried to adjust to figure out what groups that might be impacting. And the one that I didn't hear anybody talking about was our veterans and their families. And, but we immediately started seeing impact of that, and it's just increased. And, you know, as a nonprofit, you know, we've taken, a substantial challenge with all of our fundraising events being canceled. So, something like Task Force 22 is an opportunity for us to try to, you know, raise some funding that we can put directly back into these programs that, you know, impact mental health and suicide prevention. But yeah, I mean, to your point, even what the doctors were sharing earlier, I think, you know, it's something that this type of platform allows us to really have some healthy discussions and raise awareness around, because I don't think it's something that people are connecting with the COVID space right now. And bringing those veterans and their families into where that need really lies, because, you know, the isolation, the economic challenges might be presenting, you know, there's so many different components that I think COVID has brought.
If I may get to Dr. Norton for a second, the amount of their contribution, what they donated. Doctor, if you would, please.
Well, currently, I believe we're pegged at $50,000 for general purposes for helping veterans, and then we're committed to doing another $30,000 annually to buy iBots, which are the amazing robotic wheelchairs for those in need. So we're excited about that. It's just something that I can't wait to see it in action.
And they ain't cheap, because we've been through four of those we've raised for an organization not unlike what you're talking about. But I know how much those things are, and they're not cheap. But, boy, they're amazing.
No.
They're just amazing.
They're amazing, though.
Oh, heavens. They're, you know, if you're in a wheelchair, this gives you mobility, total mobility. It climbs hills. It does everything. Leave us with something. We're coming up on time. Doctor, you first, if you would. Leave us with something this morning at the end of this hour.
Well, to add on to what the doctor said earlier, for me personally, I think the biggest thing that we can do is to change the dialogue and change the debate around mental health and suicide prevention, getting people educated, changing the language so that people understand that mental health disorders, it's a disease. Alcoholism, drug addiction, depression, anxiety, those are diseases, and they need to be treated.
I tell
as
people
such.
It's like having a broken leg, but it's in your head.
Yeah, it's like coming in with a toothache. Yeah, I mean, it's real. It happens, and it's treatable.
Courtney, can we give you 30 seconds, Courtney, if you would, please? I got 30 seconds left.
Yeah, no, I just want to say that I think, now is the time to really look at how we can come together as a community, support our veterans, you know, these military heroes and their families, and they need us now more than ever. Infinite Bureau is honored to play a role in that, and I want to thank you for giving us the opportunity to share.
We're going
to
do this again. The computer's about to take over. Thank you both. Be safe, doctor. Thank you. Thank you, ma'am. On the other side, Winfield Riley joins us. It's 710 KNUS. Good morning, everyone.
There are three ways to reach the show. Call us at 303-696-1971. Text us on the free-to-download 710 KNUS app. Or send us an email. Just go to the Peter Boyles page at 710knus.com and click on Email the Show.